There's no screaming our faces on it. Anyway, episode 13, The Jewel of the Southwest. We're talking about Garfield Coombe. It's the Club Racing UK podcast, and we've lost a guest. That's a great start.
Hey!
Chris Pearson has dropped out. We will try and get him back on. Oh, hang on.
It's Ian.
That's the only ever time I've been disappointed to see Ian. Oh, he's back!
Just as it was going live, it just went, "You are offline." It's like, no, I'm not.
Please don't be.
And with that start to the show, ladies and gentlemen, it is once again the Club Racing UK podcast with your hosts. I am Robert Lewis, the gentleman certainly not above me. They're down below me today. It is Nick Holmes and Stefan Marshall, Club Racing UK. How are we doing, gents?
Very well, thanks, Rob.
We also have Ian Waterhouse joining us for snippets, if he's still there. His screen looks a bit frozen. And for this week, I'm very excited about this. We have three absolutely awesome guests. We have the commentary legend, that is Chris Dawes of Castle Coombe TV, many circuits around the country.
Who are you, Chris? They sneaking in my house.
Chris Dawes joins us this afternoon. We also have of Slip and Grip Automotive, Ross Parker. How are we doing, Ross?
Yeah, all good, buddy. Cheers.
Fantastic. And we have Chris Pearson. Now, I'm told that your company name needs a certain pronunciation. So if you could just enlighten us, Chris.
Sepia Photo.
Sepia Photo. There we go. That's okay. I thought it was something like C-3PO, but, you know.
Nick nailed it the other week. You really didn't.
Oh, right, okay. You definitely didn't.
Okay, fair enough. It's something close to that. Already, Shine Automotive have commented, good evening to everyone at Shine Automotive. We will see you at the Brands Hatch Indy 500, all being well.
Yes. Our current profile picture winners, I should point out as well.
Yes, very good, very well won.
Mega reception as well, by the way.
Say it again, Stefan.
You are.
Shine's profile picture has had a mega reception on all of our social channels. It's been a mega hit.
Oh, yeah, massively.
I did see that. It was a massive hit as well, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly. Paul Harvey commented saying good evening. We've got Ben Neil Robinson watching as well. Many, many people already tuning in this evening and commenting, including, I would expect, a lot of people from a certain corner of the lovely Southwest, somewhere in Wiltshire, somewhere known as Castle Coombe. So, of course, this is a Castle Coombe special. We're going to be talking about that today. But first, we go into the news and roundup, and we will be chatting amongst ourselves. Don't worry, chaps. The first bit, I've added this into my script today because it came up in our news feed today. MSD Live has been cancelled.
No. Cancelled is the wrong word.
Postponed
until 2021 because something called COVID.
Are they still doing an online
thing? Yes. So I obviously we're displaying there this what we were going to be this year with the club. So we phoned Mr. Wibley today to find out obviously the lowdown with current restrictions being put back in place and stuff like that. So we called him up, and obviously, unfortunately, his hands are tied. There's nothing he could do with the show. But they are doing a virtual MSD Live in November still, probably the same date. We'll find out some more details on that. Obviously, we'll probably be involved and we'll probably share that across our social media as well. And then they are, as a bonus, in June, we haven't got a date yet, but they are planning on doing a one-day June event. Pretty much probably be one of the first car shows out there. Because I think the restrictions currently, as it stands, will be lifted in March.
Yeah.
And then, so MSD are looking to be like the first event, effectively, of 2021 that everyone can go and join. And then, obviously, their main show will be still happening again in November. So gutting as much as it is, we kind of knew it was going to happen, didn't we? Let's be honest.
Yeah, I think as soon as the old six-month ban on it, well, is it a ban on events, but sort of limitation on events, 6 months, it's a long time.
Do you know what?
once again the hospitality and events industry gets a kick in. But
we're not going into it. I'm not going into it anyway. You boys can talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah, no, let's not. Every time we're going to lose now, it's depressing. Moving on. A few more comments, because the comments have blown up. We must be popular. Nick Gwinnett, good evening, Nick. Jonathan Bevan has tuned in as well. Sam Tompkins has a question for Ross. Have you been locked in the attic by Peggy?
Well, this is my place of choice when I want alone time.
Peace and quiet.
I've got a blanket.
Is this a family show? Right?
Yeah, this is a family show.
Well, we say it's a family show, and then by about 10 minutes in, it's gone to pot. So,
yeah, we've actually been quite restrained. 6 minutes in, and we're still on the air this week, so it's all good. Mark Werrell, circuit commentator, has tuned in, obviously, to see his associate and circuit commentary legend, Chris Dawes, as well. He says, hi, see you guys at the Indy 500 as well from the commentary box, and he's on track again.
Yes, awesome.
Vicky Pratt, Stuart Atkinson, all tuning in. Darren Duffield tuning in as well. Fantastic response already. Gerald Howell says, dilly dilly, Dawsey to explain.
It's the Marshals. That's the Marshals shout. That one is absolutely dilly dilly to the mighty Orange Army.
Hell yeah, let's go for that one.
Fantastic. It's only a mug of coffee this evening. I think everyone else has chosen something a bit alcoholic. Anyway, to follow on, the first item on the list, it's an ambassador alert. Dawn Boyd was in action again in the production GTI Championship.
Yes, she was.
Good solid round of results. 9th, 7th and 8th across the three races in a triple header Brands Hatch. By the looks of it, it did choose to stay dry. We did have some photos to bring up there if the guys have them in the background. There we go. There's Dawn in action. Jonathan LC Photography provided some images for Dawn. So, looking very racy. Quite a good few days.
Yeah, it is. Looking very fast.
I do like the scheme on that car. It stands out. It's mainly for the BMMC, the Marshals Association and everything. So it's it.
No, I love it. It's really good.
Looking pretty sexy. Pretty sexy. So with that, we move on to the Snetterton MSVR meeting, which was wetter than an otter's pocket. Other animal pockets are available.
What is wrong with Snetterton? Seriously?
They call it Wetterton for a reason.
Yeah, I know, but come on. I think it was like the only track. Everywhere else in the UK was lovely, and then Snetterton was just shit again. It was just...
It's because it's in Norfolk. It's so flat.
We had the Snetterton MSVR meeting. You had Snetterton, the GT and F3 meeting. Not quite club racing, I know.
Which
Nick,
I but... was at that one, and it was wet and cold. Very wet and
wet
cold.
And cold. Well, really I've put in the notes, wetter than a submarine. Other marine vehicles are available. unfortunately, Ian Waterhouse and the My Supercar crew were covering the Auchin Park MG meeting, which was wetter than Niagara Falls. Other waterfalls are available. On this note, My Supercar were covering the event. The organisers, a massive shout out to everyone.
Oh, yeah.
They had such a task on their hands. You had standing water, rivers going across the track, and unfortunately, they had to cut three races. They had to abandon the meeting because it just got too dangerous, and it does... I guess it gets to a point where safety outweighs anything else.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you're hurtling around a track at high speed. I know you're in an incredibly safe capsule while you're doing it, but there's no need for unnecessary...
Unless you're in a historic, of course.
Well,
there is that.
Well, you say that, Ross. We come to the Castlecombe Autumn Classic. Sunday was cancelled completely, abandoned without a car. Without a car entering the track, which is such a shame because, for Castlecombe, everyone's had the same problem since COVID, and Castlecombe have put on some fantastic meetings. They've managed to put together a full season for their own domestic championships as well as incorporate others. And for that to happen to them, absolutely gutting. But
especially when you consider that this was the first year that the Autumn Classic has grown year on year on year, and it was a 2-day event, and bang, the second day goes.
Yeah. Absolutely gutting for them. So we hope next year they carry on as a 2-day event. On the Saturday, a little known lad called Andrew Jordan starred in a Mini Miglia. Who's a real up and coming.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him, but I've heard he's quite an up and
he's going to be. Yeah, watch out for that name.
Star
yeah.
one day.
Mega star one day. Yeah. Yeah. Likes to fall out with West Surrey Racing if you've seen the Twitter feed, but
No,
looking at Nick's face. No, he put out some sort of cryptic tweet. Did any of the other guys see this? WSR put up obviously the British Touring Cars are going to Croft this weekend, and so they put up, this is pictures from last year, and there's Andrew Jordan because he had a mega meeting, won a load of races. Mm-hmm. They tagged everyone else, including all the other drivers, didn't tag him, so we retweeted it and put, come on, guys, I know we've fallen out, but you can at least tag me in the photos where I dominated the weekend for you. And it was a bit like, at that point, the popcorn came out, and I'm just reading the comments.
here we go.
No one would buy. That was a thing.
That's why we love social media, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I thought they would put out something quite nice and cryptic, but no, absolutely bugger all. But
very professional. That's why.
Yeah, very
professional outfit.
Very professional. Jeff Smith actually starred in the Mini Sevens as well on the Saturday. As I've mentioned, the Sunday installment was cancelled due to safety concerns. I have a short video of a section that Castle Coombe put up themselves, about 11 seconds, just to show you how treacherous the conditions were on the Saturday. If we can just get that up, chaps. Somewhere?
Oh, yeah. That looks really wet.
Broad VD. Should we do sound effects?
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Splish, splash.
Okay, it looks like we may not have the video for that. So we shall move on to the CSCC autumn round. That looked quite good. Did you guys get a chance to catch any of it live streamed?
No. I'm not gonna lie, I haven't seen any racing of recent. I've been moving house.
no one needs to know about your life, Nick.
No, well that's why. Yeah.
Ooh.
All right, shut up, you. Move on.
Yeah, there we go. Mark Werrell actually makes a point as well. Remember, we go back a couple of podcast episodes. The CSCC round at Snetterton was abandoned due to rain as well.
That's what I mean.
And that was madness. You couldn't even see Wilson. It was disappeared.
Yeah.
Did you find the submarine?
I love the fact people's equipment was self-loading itself into the back of trucks because it was just floating away.
Yeah, I did hear that.
To be fair, when I was at Snetterton for the 116 trophy, bloody glorious. It was bloody glorious. We did nearly get sunburned. Let's not rub it into the people that are missing out on racing.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Because of rain.
Mid-September. Paul Harvey, can we find out if Matt Part is actually Dirty Matt after his shocking tactics in our Sim series over the winter, rivaled only by Dirty Alex Neville? This is a private joke, I will put that. But Matt Part races in the Coombs Spoons. He was racing with us in a Sim series we were doing. So, but he was known as Dirty Matt Part for some reason.
It's pretty clean. Did you know that he was doing it with the controller, not a steering wheel?
Yeah, I was racing in... I was racing in that with a steering wheel, so that shows how good I am.
But didn't it put in perspective how good he was, though? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, no,
it doesn't count as cheating using a patch.
It's a lot harder.
I did a sim race with him at Brands Hatch. I was sweating my nuts off trying to catch him, and I couldn't. And there's been a proper steering wheel trying, giving it big guns, trying to just shows how crap I am.
He sat there with a controller eating a packet of Pringles.
there's me taking it super seriously. Okay, back to some comments. Peggy Spackman has actually replied to Sam Tompkins. Haven't quite locked him up there yet, although I do have the powers to fold away the ladder.
If you are watching
this, Peggy, do it.
Yeah, I'm just going to put it out there now. Peggy, if you do that and send photos, I'll send you a free sticker for Club Racing 10. There you go. I'm putting that one out there right now.
And wait for the noise. She does say hi, good evening to Chris Dawes and Chris Pearson as well. Fantastic. Cool. Tony Hunter joins us as well. Yep, Sam Tompkins has come straight back. Do it. Mark Werrell has also asked, any Sim series planned for over the winter, guys? I've built a new PC for iRacing, but I'm happy to join in any Xbox series again. I don't know, to be honest.
There's talk of it. We'll probably run another interclub series, winter series, possibly. We'll see how we get on.
See if Callum wants to sponsor it again.
other sponsors are available, but I did see actually. Talking of which, did you see our winners' gloves actually went out the other day for that?
Yep. Yes.
Really smart. So thank you, Callum from HRX, for those. They look mega. Yeah.
Big shout out to Callum at HRX. I did actually forget the last podcast. I didn't give a shout out to Callum. I ordered a brand new HRX fluoro suit as I put on a bit of spare pudding since the last time I raced. So time for a new suit. Really nice custom made one with the logos on it and everything. And I loved it. So thank you again, Callum McDougall and HRX. We have got.
Didn't help you splitter though, did it?
No, it didn't. Although to be fair, I did order some new brackets for that. I'm
I can't believe that, Nickel. For Wixers. 16 minutes to bring up the splitter.
I know. I had to get it in there.
That should have been the opening sentence, surely.
Well, the intro comes in.
Rob Splitter fella.
She's a prick. Right. The one thing we do have from the CSCC Autumn Race Meeting, hopefully, a clip of a brown trouser moment from Castlecombe native Nathan Nichols, who was racing, I believe, in the CSCC Tin Tops. He was going rather quick before he had a clutch failure in one of the races. Have we got the video clip of that, gents? Somewhere. I hope so, because it is a cracker.
Oh, I think they've gone to sleep, mate. I reckon they've gone out for a drink.
No, they haven't, Rob.
Right, okay, no problem. I shall move on from that. BRSCC meeting at Brands, the Formula Ford 1600s, right? I watched some online videos of that. It's bloody Coast Racing. I know Castlecombe have their own series. And obviously everyone watches the touring cars a lot. So the one thing I wanted to ask, especially yourself, Chris, Ross, you guys watch racing as well. I believe Formula Ford 1600 should still be the preferred series to look at from up-and-comers, more so than F4.
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
It's... And the key point for me is that it's the one where you actually get to learn mechanical grip. You know, there's no wings, there's no slicks. You get to learn the mechanical grip. And I know Kieran Haggerty, a Scottish young driver that sadly funds ran out. Otherwise, he could have made it a long way because he's incredibly talented. He did get into British GT, but he did Formula Ford first and was just mind-blowing. I was at Alton Park commentating and I said, ladies and gentlemen, watch this young man because he was just blowing everyone away. And he did two safety car restarts and still blew the ones that knew the circuit. First time he'd ever been there. He knew mechanical grip. He had it nailed. And so when he went into what was Formula 4 then, which was sort of like, I think is what's now Formula 3, keeping up everyone because I'm not.
Yeah.
But he went into that and suddenly it was raining, and the rest of the drivers in the field were just like spinning off left, right, and center. Poof, he's straight through because he was able to draw on his mechanical grip lessons from Formula Ford, and he just managed to sail through and dominate the race.
Yeah.
Well, just to give you an update, my missus has just put the ladder up.
Yes! What up, Peggy?
Free sticker coming your way.
Do you think people maybe consider that Formula Ford isn't quite fast enough to go from a direct feed from Formula Ford to the likes of F1?
Well, I think in the old days it used to be you did Formula Ford and then went to Formula 3. So I don't see why they should.
The issue is that you can't start it until older than you can start Formula 4.
Right.
Right.
That's the problem they've got at the minute. And if they were able to reduce the age of that, then it would come back to the 4 again.
It's got the grids and it's got the racing Formula 4, doesn't it?
As you say,
to provide drivers like that.
that's it. And like you say, it's a great starting platform to learn your craft.
Learn the mechanics.
Yeah.
Plus, there's still, I mentioned this in the previous podcast, I believe there's still a worldwide competition because Niall Murray went and did he not? Correct me if I'm wrong on this, gents. It's a world, you go to America, race against people around the world that have won their respective Formula Ford championships, Australia, America, Europe, anything like that. And you can win a seat in the ladder that goes up to IndyCar. So like Indy Lights or you know, what are the Indy 2000 or whatever it is. There is a genuine ladder there.
Sadly, although that's stopped now, hasn't it?
Have they stopped it?
The Road to Indy thing, because it was Mazda, wasn't it, that were the big promoters of that, and they don't do it at the minute. I mean, I'm hoping it'll come back again because that was a big, big deal. Absolutely. Ollie White, that was obviously one of our local drivers to start with and then went national, is like just some serious natural talent, and he went over there twice, and certainly the first time he came a very close runner-up, so was in with a chance.
Yeah, and again as well, obviously, Nick, you know, I'm a big lover of the V8s. And back in the days when you have the likes of Garth Tander, Marcus Ambrose, Mark Scaife and the like, they learnt about mechanical grip, doing stuff like Formula Ford. Okay, Mark Scaife didn't. He had a bit more of an apprenticeship. But a lot of the guys, the big names, and even James Courtney.
Yeah, they've all been through it.
James Courtney was Jaguar's test driver, went from Formula Ford. Callum Lockie, I think. Was he Formula Ford? Or am I thinking? No, Callum Cloud.
There's tons of names that have been through the ranks there, isn't there? So,
yeah, but just watching that the other day, and I just thought, this is better than Formula Four.
I think the more interesting drivers are the guys that like don't go through the usual path of motorsport, you know, starting in karting and then to Formula Ford, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's people out there that have gone straight from driving on the road pretty much, or straight from track days to being like front of the grid.
Yeah.
Brown at Castle Coombe this year was a good example of that in Hot Hatches. Yeah, you know, he'd gone straight from track days with us and with Castle Coombe, and then gone out and won his races. So, I'm not, you know, that's not top of the top, but
that's assuming they've got the talent from the get go. What I love about Formula Ford is it teaches them, it gives them those skills because they have to learn it pretty damn quickly out there in those tight Formula Ford races. Sure.
Exactly. Right, back to some comments there. Sorry, guys, it's absolutely gone mental out there on the pages tonight. Jonathan Bevan, don't miss a shout-out for Rob Burley, who got in an old BMW E36 and drove its socks off to win in the CMMC race at Brands Hatch. Yep, very correct there, John Bevan. That was a good result for Rod, who wasn't out in his usual Escort WRC Cosworth. Mark Werrell, he's been very busy tonight. I think he's getting quite into the conversation, so thank you, Mark. Formula Ford 1600 was and still is so much like karting. Pure feel and mechanical grip. The ladder is even too confused even now. Money to compete in single-seaters at the top level is crazy money. That's why the market is struggling. Drivers realise GT racing will provide a better career.
Yep.
Yeah, again,
better,
I mean, look at Tom...
Better career, or is it easier to get into?
No, look at Tom Onslow Cole, right? He left British Touring Cars where he barely made a penny, was still driving around in Rover 75 or whatever. He's, you know, I did read an article from a major UK newspaper. He's making a good couple of hundred grand a season from driving GTs.
There's more professional racing drivers in GT racing, and it can be as simple as the fact that each GT car has at least two drivers. Quite often, one of those, of course, is a rich gentleman driver as well that might fund it. So, you know, or it's a team and you're good enough to get paid to be there. And so it is the big place to be. And, of course, it's one of those ones that, interestingly, everybody was going, oh, you're saturating it, you're saturating it. It doesn't seem to have, does it? You know, we've got plenty.
That's the big club level sort of GT thing, isn't it? That, you know, I've worked for a couple of teams and you always have that gentleman driver who sort of pays for the car and the maintenance on the vehicle, and then you have a faster driver who like trains the gentleman driver, and then they go out and they race together. And it's always quite obvious on the
obviously deals,
you know,
deals
when they're out there racing, you can tell the difference between who's in the seat.
Mark Werrell's come back. For me, Ross Gunn is a perfect example of someone who's understood the career path. Lots of karting, a season in the BRDC Formula 4, then GT. GT4 champion, and now he's in what they would call an AM works driver. There we go. So I suppose that's a better way of getting into it. So moving on from the news roundup there and the comments, we move on to today's topic, of course, having you three here. Castlecombe, beautiful circuit, celebrating its 70th year this year.
Well, hey.
So there we go. So
70th year, bloody hell.
Yep. I think only
it's wearing, it's just, wearing better than some of us are. I'm only in our 30s, 40s, 50s.
It's devastating, though, because of course it was going to be a big celebration year. The awards I was going to be hosting was in Filton, in the in the shadows of Concord, in just an incredible setting that wasn't just awards. We were going to have all sorts of dignitaries and everything. Even that's had to be cancelled. The big event, race meet events, they've been watered down. It's my heart bleeds for everybody at the circuit for this, and I'm hoping, as weird as it may be in normal circumstances, is that it does get done next year. But I have no idea yet.
You have to do a 70+1.
Yeah. Everybody knows why it's delayed, so surely it would still hold water, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It needs to happen. I mean, it's, as per my notes here, it's one of the longest established circuits in the UK. I think Silverstone's the only circuit that's older, so it's one of your old school airfield circuits. Until 1999, the circuit still had its original layout, which was around the perimeter of the old airbase, same as Silverstone, Thruxton alike. You've had the likes of Stirling Moss go there and win, Mike Hawthorn, Colin Chapman, Roy Salvadori, John Surtees, Ayrton Senna, Nigel Mansell, David Coulthard. You look at stuff like this, and I was looking on, you have a browse on YouTube and you look at some certain videos on there, and I actually found this gem from the archives. You're going to like this, Ross, and Nick's going to like it too. Please, can we play this bit of... It is a YouTube video, and we've played those before. Have we got the
two Ferraris up front? We're just riding on board here with Ben Collins. Now he's starting just behind the Ferraris and working those tyres hard, Rob.
Working both the tyres and the brakes hard, trying to get some heat in there before the start. Oh, he almost runs in the back of the Ferrari ahead of him there.
That would have been embarrassing. We've had a couple of cars off on the green flag lap yesterday, including the Mosler of Phil Keane and the Jones Brothers Porsche. Let's hope they all get round it safely this time. I think they're all settled now. We're ready for the start. The number 35 car on the inside, driven by Andrew Cocotti. Tim Mullen on the outside. Ben Collins behind. That was a slow start for the Mosler there. Didn't get away very well. That's got lost in the pack there, I would say, as they went through the first corner.
British GT at Castlecombe. How awesome is that?
Yeah. That's brilliant.
I actually watched that the other night.
they've got the entire 2005 season on YouTube. But anyway, I digress. Because Ross, I saw what you put as one of your posts. So just explain to us what you used to do when you were younger at Coombe to go and watch the likes of British GT.
I guess I've been going to Coombe. Well, not as long as Chris Dawes, but. When I was younger, I used to cycle 13 miles each way just to go and watch on my own. Take my dad's old school camera with the film. Back in the day, you used to get film. You have to take it to the chemist and have it.
Remember that?
And used to just watch the racing on my own. And and back in those days, we used to have the F3s and GTs. But some neighbours got a bit funny about the noise and we don't have them anymore. But just having I'm not big into supercars on the road, but for race cars on a small track like that, those in the Tuscan Challenge cars were something else to behold around Castlecombe, especially Challenge. On the old layout. The old layout was crazy fast. Some awesome battles. And I did work for Roll Centre, who used to run one of the Moslers. That was where I did some of my first work experience was at Coombe with those guys, and standing on the pit wall and listening to those cars go past is really something else.
You've been addicted ever since, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's cool to, like I was saying to Chris, the other day, it's cool to be able to have been a spectator at a circuit like that from a youngster, and then and then get more involved with the circuit as you get older. And you sort of become a part of it, and you're, you know, so passionate about that particular track and motorsport in general.
Fantastic.
Awesome. So, to Chris Dawes now, your earliest memories of Castle Coombe, what sort of got you there?
Well, I grew up a place called Yate, just the other side of Castle Coombe Circuit, which is probably, about a 20-minute drive away. And my dad took me there when I was 5 years old. And I'm 43 now, so it was a long time ago, as Ross decided to point out. Cheers, mate. but it was where I fell in love with racing. I remember me and my dad getting there early in the morning for the start of qualifying, get the deck chairs out up at Quarry Corner, and we'd sit there and the smell of everything, the sight of everything, no fences at that point. It was all open, and you just sort of sat there behind the Armco and what have you. And it was just where I fell in love with racing, whether it was the modern single-seaters and the GTs, or whether it was even like probably some of the things that stick in my mind the most is like the big classic Jaguars that go up round Quarry just rolling, you know, and you're like, that's not right. And yet they'd still be racing hard, and I got absolutely hooked on racing, and it carried on through the years. Is that suddenly I would be going up there as a teen on my own, sort of like high teen, so I could drive myself. Then even with my the current Mrs. Dawes, as I call her, she loves that, we'd go up there and do the two-day meets, and we'd camp up there and sort of you know, have a few beers on the night in between and just absolutely adore it. So as Ross said, is for me to suddenly get the opportunity to join the commentary team there 9 years ago was just the dream. And of course I've completed that dream even further to now be on the racing club board, to host the awards nights. You know, it's just an absolute dream, because it's one of those circuits that I have people asking me, what do they do to get such big crowds? There's always big crowds, other than this year, obviously, but there's always massive crowds.
It's always been that way as well. Always.
Absolutely.
And like the F3 GT days, you couldn't see a space on Quarry Corner. It was absolutely packed. You know?
Rammed.
Yeah. Those double days were awesome. Like you say, camping over, even though you live 10 minutes down the road.
Yeah.
But, you know, you'd have a beer and at night you could lay on the track and watch the stars, you know.
I used to go corn diving in the middle, and I broke my nose. Hey,
Steph will be doing that on Friday.
You can't do it anymore. It's now called solar paddle diving.
Solar paddle.
Which is a bit more serious, apparently. It hurts a bit more.
It is a bit more expensive. Chris Hignall has commented, a fantastic weekend with the GTs. Absolutely awesome. A young whippersnapper, Dawsey. I've been going there since the late 70s, he comments.
You are.
I weren't Jamie Moore, born to the 70s, so that's fine.
Jamie Moore comments, evening lads. Good evening, Jamie. Hopefully see you guys down at the Brands Hatch Indy 500. Mark Rock, I do apologise. He didn't graduate to become an AM driver. He meant Aston Martin works driver. Okay. Fair enough. I will clear that up. Chris Pearson, so give us your earliest memories of Coombe. What brought you to Castle Coombe?
Well, for me, it was while I was serving in the RAF Lynham, sort of about sort of 20 minutes, half hour away. Trying to think when that was. It must have been sort of mid 2000, probably 2003, 2002, something like that. And I just saw a flyer for Castle Coombe, and I was like, oh, that looks like quite fun. Because I did a bit of kart racing and had a pop at rallycross once. And I thought I'd go down and see what it is all about. And It was only really a couple of events that I went to in that time frame, and then I got posted away somewhere else, and different priorities took on. But then it was about 2.5 years ago. One of the guys that was driving in the Hot Hatch challenge, Chris Carter, he put out a post on Facebook saying about he was after sponsors and all this kind of stuff to try and help him get into his racing as a guy with cerebral palsy. And, I read his backstory and stuff, and I was like, right, I sent him a message. I was like, right, I've got no money, but I can take photos for you. That could help promote your cause. And so it was sort of late 2018. I think it was the last race of 2018. I went back there again, took some photos for Chris, and that was it. Completely hooked again. So I haven't been to every race meeting since.
Yeah.
Nice. Fantastic. Fantastic to hear. And I believe he's still going. Has he been out this year at all, Chris Carter?
No, not this year, no.
Okay, I'm sure he will be back, though.
Definitely.
Right. With that, gents, move on to...
Just hold on.
Go on, Nick, yeah?
Hold on. I don't know if I'm jumping in here because I don't have the script there. Yeah, one question I have, though, for you, for all you Castle Coombe guys, is why does Coombe accumulate so many fans as opposed to all the other circuits?
I think it's the home series.
Why does that happen? Because we've said in previous shows, haven't we, about the fact that Castle Coombe, the audience and the people you get in through the door.
It's the local circuit.
I think it's access as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, you can do it all the way around the track.
Trying to entice people into motorsport, but it just seems that Castle Coombe do it so well.
I think you can see
an access all the way around.
Yeah, and you can see a lot of the circuit from multiple places. And I think Ross is absolutely right. The home series, the home championships have got a lot to do with it because it's almost like that, if you like, I kind of almost similar to, say, Speedway, for example, where you kind of have your favourites and you're cheering on for your favourites. And, you know, I don't know, like, for example, Ilse Cox, you know, I always remember Ilse and Brian Cox, Mark Wyatt in his yellow Vauxhall Astra. You know, these are things that just stick in my mind for more years than they'd like me to say in reality. And you kind of cheer them on. You get a connection to it. You can see so much of it. It's affordable. And, you know, you're talking like a catchment area. If you think about it, you're talking all the way down the southwest. You've got Pembrey, which is actually a lot further than you might think away into Wales. Thruxton, which only has, you know, probably has less race days than Coombe. And for Castle Coombe, there's
three
only
three places
10,
to watch.
Yeah, and at Coombe, there's only 10 car racing days. So in other words, it's fairly concentrated. If you take, you know, all the MSV circuits as an example, which I absolutely adore and I adore commentating at them, but they've got race meets pretty much every weekend, which for us as like anoraks and addicts is awesome, but you're going to saturate your numbers at the events, aren't you?
Yeah, very true. And again, I've been to a couple of club meetings there while I was building my car and you just want to go and watch a bit of club racing. So I went to Coombe a few times and you almost got like standing in quarry, you kind of got, it feels weird, but it was like a homely feeling. It just felt a lot more,
Sort of local, isn't it?
I grew up just the other side of Newbury, so I wasn't that far away from Coombe at all. It was probably at that time my local track apart from Thruxton, so I would pop there and watch the odd day. But you just got a bit of a different feeling, even though it wasn't the British Touring Cars, it wasn't at the time, it wasn't British GT, they had gone by then. You were watching club racing, but it just felt a lot more personal and a lot more homely as well, especially with the access.
And it's pretty, you know, I can't think of another way of saying this, but it's pretty balls out racing because there's no gravel chaps. There's no loads of concrete off there. You know, it is a very brave circuit. And I know, for example, there's, you know, people are sort of saying, oh, can we improve this? Can we improve that? And they've got a challenge there because if they improve certain areas, it will lose the feel of the circuit. It's got to keep its ye oldie world to some extent, hasn't it?
I think that's the thing, you know, it feels a bit old school and that's what makes it feel sort of homely. And
absolutely,
like with the home series, you always got someone that you can relate to, you know, when you're watching them race. And you know, I still get excited when I watch the saloons go out or when I'm not actually in a hot hatch race because my car's broken. And I watch it from the paddock. You know?
That's because it's a Honda. What do you expect?
Hey, Honda's a
Yeah.
They just lose
oil. The funny thing is, you know, we're all sat here, but in actual fact, Castle Coombe's technically my local circuit as well. It's Yeah, I'm only based down in Poole, or now I'm in Ringwood, but still, I'm pretty much tied between Thruxton and Coombe myself. So,
yeah, well, if you think about it, all the way down to Cornwall is, and Devon and Somerset, all of that are going to be going up to that.
Yeah, so that's probably why then. This is.
Yeah, I mean, even if you draw across to even Reading, Oxford, they're not far away. So kind of a big catchment area for.
It's also not that expensive to go and spectate for the day, you know.
Correct. Yeah,
it's spot on, you know, and being able to access the paddock as well and look around all these cars.
And to be honest,
I think that was definitely one of the things that drew me there quite a lot, was the fact that you could go into the paddock and you could chat to the drivers and you could see the mechanicking going on. And yeah, it was just really sort of good access.
And to be honest, it's also having that going on, just going on from what Chris was saying there, you're more likely to then get what I would say more homegrown drivers, because they'll think, I want a bit of that. And I know for a fact, if you go into the Coombe shop next to Merlin Motorsport, the first thing you will see is a big thing of, right, how can you get involved? Plain as day. So people can access that so easily and go, oh, bloody hell, it doesn't actually take that much for me to get involved.
It's not that difficult, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, add to it Ross's series, the Hot Hatch series. You know, that is a key thing about taking these people that are going and doing, the track days and the action days, and suddenly go, well, actually, I'd like to race. By default, it's not a championship, so that they can sort of dip in and dip out and have a go. And hence, we're getting the big grids, including this year. That was the one that was the big grid still.
Yeah.
And it's suddenly, and where do they go from that? Is that they can go whichever way they want. So, you know, it attracts even more. And suddenly you've got that relatability from those that have been on the track and are now up on the spectator banks, and vice versa.
Yeah,
exactly. So we've more or less moved on to sort of a general discussion about the homegrown championships, about Castle Coombe. I've got another video for you guys. Nick will like this. It's from back in the day, Motors TV. It's an old school clip of the live Motors TV Club Race Day. We can just play that, gents, hopefully.
Neil Cunningham started from sixth place in the Embassy Porsche.
Wrong clip. should be the next one down on the script.
I was going to say that was a Ferrari. That's not overly club racing.
No.
Unless, of course, you've got lots of money, which is absolutely fine. But.
Well, to be fair, just seeing who's in the background. Gents, do we have a script? Do we have... On the script, it should be another link for the Motors TV Live Club Race Day. Bear with me.
Well, while we're waiting on that...
I think even Chris has got to look for it.
As somebody... I've not raced at Coombe at all, but I can 100%, 1,000% say that if the funds were available, I would definitely be racing at Coombe, without question.
Fantastic. Right, unfortunately, I've just had the information relayed to me that the last clip is not available, but I did find, if you do go...
So there you go, everybody. If anyone has spare funds,
there we go.
I'll take some pictures for you.
Exactly. But the clip, if you do go onto YouTube, you go onto the Castle Coombe webpage, there is
we can post these videos.
We will post these clips the chat afterwards. Yeah. But this one in particular, it's a Motors TV Live Club Race Day, which did get quite popular with Castle Coombe, and it was a fantastic race that I believe Adam Preble won in an old Rover Tomcat. I've probably sent you it before, Nick, in recent conversations we've had.
The Pebbles are always super quick in those Tomcats. They run on the spoons for years. And,
it's crazy quick in anything, to be fair.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Well, yeah. from that, it was a little bit sort of further ahead. I will ask one question. Gary Preble, just how special is he to Castle Coombe?
Wow.
I think that, you know, the whole Preble family is sort of, again, a part of that big family. And they, you know, I think his dad was racing there, wasn't he, in the GTs years and years ago. You know, the people like that and families like that are always racing, like the Coxes as well.
Ilse and Brian Cox.
They're super important to the way that Castlecombe is as a circuit.
Fantastic. So the three championships you sort of have at Castlecombe, so you have the Saloons, the GT Championship, Formula Ford 1600, and then, of course, you have the Hot Hatch sort of as a standalone series. So no official championship. But the one thing I've noticed in the past few years, the Hot Hatch has just exploded. So what, I mean, to you guys, I mean, Ross, you race in the series. What makes you think has attracted people to the Hot Hatch in particular?
I think it's sort of the perfect jump from track days to racing. Most guys, you know, when you go out and you do track days, then you're in a Clio or you're in a Civic or you're in, you know, a 306 or a 106. So to be able to chuck a fire extinguisher in it and then go racing effectively is the way forward. You guys were talking on the last episode with, I think, with Ben Rushworth about, you know, budget racing and, you know, about the C1s and the 116 trophy, etc. You know, you can build a car to go racing in the Castlecombe Hot Hatches, you know, for like $6,000 to $8,000, you know, ready to race with your overalls and everything. And you've only got to go to one circuit. You know, if you're based in the Southwest, yeah, like you guys have said, this, you know, it's really your local circuit, then it's nice and easy to go to the one place every time. And the racing is mega, you know, it doesn't matter where you are on that grid. You've always got someone to race. And it's not necessarily people in your class either. You know, I'm usually racing with, you know, three or four different cars in three or four different classes. And it becomes then a race for overall position rather than class position. You know, there's always the issue that you've got with every club race, and it is budget. You know, if you're willing to put $20,000 into your car, then the chances are, you know, you're going to be quite high up that grid. But if you can build an average car like me and be an average driver, then you're going to be mid grid.
So. But then to be fair with this year in particular, Andy's actually commented now, Mike Bland, Hot Hatch is awesome, always something to race. Well, Mike Bland was racing in the Hot Hatch this year as our ambassador. How's he got on, gents, do you reckon?
Yeah, he's been doing pretty well, if I remember rightly. And this is the thing, you know, he hasn't put a huge amount of money into his car, but he spent a lot of time just getting seat time there on track days and testing. And you know, I think
that 306 looks mega.
Yeah, it does. In green. Yeah,
it's a gorgeous car.
It just reminds me of the production class. It's
the old production touring. Yeah.
Exactly. Anything from that era just reminds me of that. Oh, I'll take off the rose tinted glasses now. But obviously, so the Hot Hatch have just had mega grids, obviously, and you have your usual suspects at the front: Gary Preble, Adam Preble with his Astra. Josh Harvey in his EG Civic, a chap called Ross Parker in a pretty sick looking EF Civic. Not sure that you guys would know him. Quite a nice chap, I'm told.
Those pesky Peugeots as well. There's a lot of quick Peugeots in there.
But he's stuck in his loft.
Currently stuck. Yeah. To be fair, I do draw attention to a comment earlier from Peggy Spackman. Photo evidence has been sent to the Club Racing UK page. Good. To be fair, it was confirmed by Ross Live on Air, Peggy. So Nick will sort out a sticker to yourself.
Love it.
Darren Duffield also comments: Hot Hatch racing at Coombe is so competitive and bloody fast as well. I think that's what makes it so exciting, the fact that Coombe is such a fast circuit.
And I've got to point out, Darren, is that Darren's another one that's been a revelation in the Hot Hatches as well, in his Mini, and he's just been improving and actually taken on Stephen Jensen, who we know knows that circuit inside out. You know, Formula Ford stalwart for many years. He's out there in the Mini, and what is also an incredible car, what they've done with that car, him and his dad Erling, who of course Erling Jensen has got massive history at the circuit as well. And Darren Duffield has got closer and is just, you know, really, really impressed me a lot this year, Darren, to be fair.
That Cooper S class is quite tight, isn't it? There's always a good number of entries for the Class E Cooper S's. Darren, my battle with Darren, he's a hard driver to
yeah.
to deal with.
I have heard that. I have heard he's hard, but you know that the minis was a new class, wasn't it? And that was a good class to add to it.
Yeah, I think, and you know, considering their forced induction compared to everyone else's naturally aspirated, you know, it's they've been really competitive with the other classes, which is great.
I've got Sam Strong messaging as well, saying, "Have I got a cocktail shaker in the background?" No, I haven't. I've just got the gin here, mate. If it's in the background, it's not close enough, mate.
Oh, fantastic! I was just about to read that comment out because of straight away afterwards he put shaken, not stirred.
Yeah, Sam knows me well enough.
So the Castle Coombe saloons, the one thing I will say about the saloons, I have noticed they've always had massive grids, but they have dipped a bit this year.
In reality, I don't think it's a great surprise this year because those are obscenely quick. You know, they are just phenomenal. You've got to see those Class A cars to believe it, that they've just got quicker and quicker and quicker. We've had challenges with new tyres that came out this year that, by all accounts, was always going to put some pressure on the drive shaft, I think it was, in particular, and possibly the gearboxes and things like that. And it's kind of proven true, sadly, to some extent. It's, you know, it is not cheap, those cars, to go. And, you know, because it's a championship, and this is one of the things that I was saying about the hot hatches being a series, that blossomed, is that the saloons kind of went, wow, do I want to sort of throw in for a whole year? I think there's a few of them that probably regretted it once it kind of went on for the whole year and they got enough rounds in, but they kind of went, let's wait till next year. And it's not the only championship that suffered that around the country, is it? You know, there's let's wait till next year. But the hot hatches, there's an irony there, is that they went, oh, well, do you know what? It's a series, so I can dip in, dip out. Now go and do the maths of how many of them actually did every round in the end. You know, it's
No, that's a very, very fair point, Chris.
It'll come back up next year, I guarantee it.
And with those Class A cars as well, you know, we used to say years ago you couldn't run big power through front wheel drive, but then you go to Castle Coombe and you watch these boys in their Leons and even the Tomcats back in the day. Mm-hmm. And you know, you talk. I don't know what they were. You know, there was talk of like 500 brake. You know, at the time. And when you see the onboard, that old school onboard from Motors TV and the likes, and the old Dialynx Quattros and stuff, when they still had the four wheel drives in there. If you can find that on YouTube, it's insane to watch. They're literally bumper to bumper for 10 laps. It's awesome.
I will be having a sleuth later, I think, to have a look at that. That sounds good. But some of the GT machines absolutely mad. But what changed with the tyres? Have they just changed the rules to allow the more stickier tyres in? Or
because hot hatch were running all of the stickier semi slicks, and saloons were forced to run on ADO8R. And of course, we don't have ADO8R anymore.
Of course.
And the RS was reported to be not as good. So I think all the guys in saloons were like, hang on, all the little hot hatches are running, you know, stickier tyres than us. Let us have a go, really.
Right, okay, so that's a change for this year. But I can imagine next year when everyone sort of has their ducks in the line financially.
Chris, that's empty.
Oh, no.
It doesn't matter.
Current Mrs. Dawes needs to sort you out.
It doesn't matter how much you shake that, mate. I think that's empty.
And there we go. At 10:50, it's taken 53 minutes for Chris Dawes to finish the gin.
You'd have to top it up with water, look. That's what I used to do to my dads back in the day.
fantastic. So the Coombe GT, it's one of the grids I sort of looked at. So varied, it's unreal. You've got anything from TCR cars to... Sorry, Chris, I know you went away to get the all-important more gin.
Sorry, mate. Sorry, buddy.
It's all right, mate.
Ultimate professional.
I was just saying, Castle Coombe GT has got to me the most varied GT championship I've ever seen, with the likes of TCRs, Silhouettes, Westfields, Intermarks, like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
It is. It's amazing. I mean, that's been around for years as well, you know, and it's had its tough years. It really has, where the, you know, and I know from it, I can think of some years where I've commentated on it and it took a lot of effort to sort of create the excitement in it, because there would be few and they'd be massively spread out. But over, the last 2 years, it's come back again. And Joe Lukovic and the crew at Coombe, you know, hats off to them, Steve Weston and that, to sort of like manipulate the technical entry element to it to sort of make sure that it worked. And it would come up, and honestly, some of the cars, you know, to suddenly have a Noble in there, an Audi R8, the Lucky Care has been bringing a McLaren, last year, the new Ferrari 488, you know, it's just some incredible barmy stuff. And they're so quick. And you'll always get races up and down through the field nowadays as well.
That's one thing I do like to see. Like I say, we do focus on the club level stuff, but I'm not going to lie, I do love seeing everyone trying to one up each other with the next biggest, fastest GT car going. Yeah. did someone rock up with an ex Nismo GTR like last?
That's
insane. Like, you know, there going, shit, I need to find something bigger and faster.
Yeah, like World Circuit.
Get on eBay quick. I love it.
Well, I mean,
there's Nigel Mustill, there's Godzilla.
Well, it's not Godzilla, actually. Graham Tilley's got Godzilla. It's brother of Godzilla. because there's two of them, and one of them's in GT Cup. But was it last year or the year before? Is that Nigel Mustill rocked up with that Volvo thing? Did you see that?
Yeah, that mid-engine.
Is that Chris?
Do you remember what time that did round Coombe? It was low, wasn't it? It was like a
101 or 102. And yeah, who was racing it? Dan. Oh, I got a mental block on his name now. That was actually driving it for Nigel, and he was convinced that in the right conditions he would go sub 1 minute.
We haven't seen a sub 1 minute since the chicanes, have we?
No, and he was convinced he was going to get it, but sadly Nigel sold it, and I don't know where it is now. It's gone, but that thing was just obscene. Central driving position and everything. It was just incredible.
Was that like the ex?
There we go. Call out to the new owner. Bring it to Coombe and get a sub minute time.
Absolutely.
Let's do it.
Bring it to Coombe, or just if you own a Formula One team, say. If there's any Formula One teams in the UK, like seven of them, maybe bring a couple to Coombe, try it out.
No.
Not Grosjean, though, because he crashes a lot. But, yeah. Well, he does. Yes, there we go. Elliot Harris, last year he brought it. 1 minute one, and it is an ex-Swedish touring car. So it was one of those silhouette things that they had for a while before.
My God.
They realized one minute. Yeah. Around Castle Coombe.
There you go. Steph, your benchmark has been set.
That's the target for Friday. Isn't it?
I love the fact
the target for Friday, mate.
You've got the the engineering fights going on within the GTs as well, where they're sort of like constantly working on things. Ollie Ball in the Vauxhall Tigra. You know, that team, Jeremy, keeps giving me the updates about what they're working on that. And that thing has got a good chance of getting down towards that Volvo's time. I think they're at 105s at the minute, and they're adamant that they can keep going lower and lower. And then you've got Alan Hamilton, Team Hamilton, in that Westfield Aero thing that is just getting quicker. They're just still ironing out the reliability issues, but that thing is just getting quicker and quicker. And then, of course, you get Tony Bennett, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in any paddock anywhere, in that Caterham R300 that has just been tweaked and tuned and is just rapid. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we had a couple of other Audis rock up this year where we had that, the Audi Super Tourer GT.
Look at the XDTM thing, looking thing, wasn't it?
With the sort of like they're not gold doors, are they? I forget what you call the ones that go up. Leaf doors or something like that. I can't remember.
Oh, the old... Yeah.
Suicide doors, they call
it. It was weird. That profile.
Yes. No, suicide doors open like that.
Up the roof, it just kind of.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. But and then there was another Audi as well. Sasha Kakad rocked up with another Audi as well, like an S3 type.
Was that the TCR that he has?
It wasn't. I know why you say that, but it wasn't. It
kind of looks like it.
It was something like a Danish touring car or something like that originally, and it was just incredibly quick. And that Sasha Kakad had only ever done, I can't remember whether it was rallying or rally cross, and this was his first foray into circuit racing, And he was just brilliant, to be fair, as well. And and that's what I love about the GTs. It's so varied that you don't know what the heck you're getting.
You've got those.
It's like going into a nightclub with a blindfold on.
Yeah. And you know, you've got the guys on big budgets, but you've got the guys who are keeping up with them on home-developed cars as well. You
know? Nightclub, yeah. What's that?
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally agree with that, Ross. I'm a big fan of, like, as you said, the underdog taking it to the people that are, I don't know, manufacture backed or.
Yeah, it's
know,
a British thing, though, isn't it? Loving an underdog.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Yeah, absolutely that.
That's how Lotus started, Colin Chapman.
And just add it reminded to me is that the one that drove that Volvo, Nigel Mustell's car, is great, Craig Dolby.
Ah,
okay. Very rapid car. Driver, sorry.
Fantastic. Elliot Harris, evening all. Shout out to Walt Coombe for an epic season. And Dawsey, get on the gin. He's got it. He's had it and got it.
He's finished it.
He is on it.
Dawsey's finished it. Sam Strong, Gullwing. Is that what you're on about?
No, because that's the one that goes like that, isn't it? But it actually goes like that. It goes up like that.
They're just Lambo. They're Lambo doors on. I used to find them on all like. Yeah, the old Max Power Renault 5s used to run them, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah. That Alpha's rear door tried to copy the same mechanics of that on one of your track days.
There you go, that's a new one.
Yeah, Lewis from Tack and Tires. That's a quick car.
Bring back Lambo doors.
Supposed to be doing hot hatches in that soon, so it'd be good to see that racing properly.
Fantastic.
Once he's tied the doors back on.
180 horsepower and 750 kilos, so should be all right.
There we go. Jason Stevens, Ross, does Peggy know you're hiding in the loft with your train set?
Well, it's actually a Scare Electrics, but I'm a bit cooler than train set.
Fair enough.
I thought I spent a lot of time at the loft because a lot of people know about it.
Yeah, man, this is my man cave. This is my man cave.
That's what it says. Anthony Cooper says scissor doors.
Scissor doors.
There we go. So that's where we're at. Nick, scissors. That's where we're at. The scissor doors.
That's the ones.
No, let's just call it scissor doors and move on, for Christ's sake. That's going to bug me. And finally, the Formula Ford 1600. Again, I mean, I said it earlier on, Formula Ford 1600, a breeding ground for amazing drivers. Mechanical grip, home circuit. And to be honest, with a circuit like Castle Coombe, I would think the racing is just as close as the national guys, and a lot of the Castle Coombe drivers could take it to the national guys and beat them fair and square.
Yeah, don't doubt it.
Discuss. I mean, Chris, you, from commentating on the Formula Ford 1600s, what would you sort of say?
The easiest thing for me to say is I have a phrase that as a commentator, we just get to read the story that is written in front of us by the drivers out on the circuit. And when the writing is as good as the likes of the Formula Ford, it makes our life easy. It just happens in front of us. And I have to stop myself from exploding from the excitement. It's as simple as that. It is just mental. And equally is that, you know, we've had times when sometimes the field numbers might dip for varying reasons, but another phrase I have is it only takes two cars to race. And again, the Formula Ford sum it up is that sometimes we can suddenly have half a dozen that will break away at the front and then numerous other gaps further down. But even when it's been in its sort of like, you know, dip down years, is that it might only be a couple of people at the front, but they are just battling backwards and forwards. It's bike racing on four wheels.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And again, it might be a bit weird to say for what many people would think is a local series, but the front-running drivers in a Castle Coombe Formula Ford 1600 grid, you would see them battling it out with the top drivers in GP3, GP2, maybe even Formula One someday, because it's that kind of stepping stone.
Or it highlights talent, doesn't it? It's a perfect breeding ground for, I don't know,
even playing field, isn't it?
Yeah. You're all roughly with the same equipment, and it's down to how you learn the car and drive it. Yeah, the driver side of it.
Understanding the Wow. As you spoke about before, it's understanding the mechanical grip of the car and what the car can do as well as how you drive it, rather than having all the big aids.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely don't.
Yeah, don't want to get big aids.
No. I thought that one may fail.
It's all right, Steph. It's all right, mate. It's 9:05. We've gone past the threshold. It's all good.
Hey.
There we go. One thing, Castle Coombe Racing Club did post that they were pleased to announce the Castle Coombe Racing Club Marshal of the Year for 2020 was Roger Lovelock. Yes. And the new Marshal of the Year for 2020 was Sarah Weston. Worthy winners indeed. Thank you to all our loyal friends in Orange. We couldn't do it without you. Exactly.
Marshals.
Any kind of racing.
Yes.
It's down to you guys. Fantastic. Yes. With that, gents, we digress from Castle Coombe Racing Club. We actually go to Mr. Ross Parker. When I did first message you about this, you were a bit reticent about you didn't want us to talk about slip and grip that much. But with what you've done with it and what you're doing with the motorsport community, in particular around Castle Coombe in the southwest, tell us a little bit about what got you to start up slip and grip, what you guys do, and any future plans.
So I'm not overly bothered about talking about my business because we're actually here to talk about racing. I started Slip and Grip Automotive, which is now effectively a group of bunch of members that are all track-based or race-based people. And we run track days and other events throughout each season. And it's got that sort of same community feel that Castle Coombe has got. I created the business because at my age, when I was 17, 18, you guys will be able to relate to this probably as well. There was a lot of groups and youth car clubs around, which were all about Asda car parks and McDonald's and all that sort of stuff. Because I live so close to Castle Coombe, I started doing track days from like the age of 18. But I always used to go on my own, and I'd be there with a load of like old boys in kit cars. So the part of the reason for Slip and Grip was that I end up going to all of these events, but with a great community effectively.
Yeah.
And it's just developed into a business that, you know, we have track days at Castle Coombe, and we have a rally stage events up in Wales that allow guys to go out there and learn their cars without using them on the roads, like some of us used to back in the day. It would be really important for me if the government could do something about people learning car control when they start to learn to drive on the road. Like, how many crashes would we prevent? If people could go out and do a track day and learn car control.
That's why they don't do it, because they make money.
That's their fear, isn't it?
That's also why old people don't get retests, because they crash. That's true.
So yeah, that was part of my reason behind having the club, and now that it is a developed business and it's so focused on my local circuit, Castle Coombe, that we can now sort of push people into these local race series like the Hot Hatches. And part of my reason for doing the Hot Hatches, aside from always wanting to race, was that I could show other people that actually, pretty much on the same budget as you run a track car all year, you can go racing. If I'm doing, I don't want to discern people from doing track days because that's what earns me money. But if you consider like the pads and tires that you use doing 100 miles on a track day, compared to two 15-minute races in hot hatches, the top boys are not even going through. They're doing like 6-8 tires a season, which is nothing.
Yeah.
Whereas if I was doing a track day and I was in an Impreza or a Skyline doing 100 miles a day, then I'd be doing a couple of hundred quid's worth of fuel, set of tires, and probably a set of pads as well.
Yeah.
And in a Skyline or an Impreza or an M3 or something, then that can mean an extra, an extra 800 quid on your track day sort of thing. Whereas like my hot hat.
But luckily, no one wants to do. Luckily, no one's going to do a hot hatch challenge in a Skyline or an Impreza, though.
Well, yeah, no, this is it. You know, you
there is that.
You can go out there in a Civic. You know, I did my first races last year with just a B16 EK that we used to use for rentals for track days, with some eBay coilovers and some decent pads and stock brakes, and I was mid grid. You know, So as long as you put the practice and the time in, and you know, do those track days to get that seat type in, then you'll do well on a reasonable budget.
I find it's quite a common misconception. I hear that a lot from track day people, like, oh, you know, I only do track days because I can't afford to go racing. But then, like, yeah, you say, if you actually top up the costs, you'll probably find you're spending more in a year doing track days.
People argue
the toss that, you know, the track time you get, but
we have guys on our track days that have developed cars to a crazy spec, you know, and they spend huge amounts of money. And I wish I had taken that leap into racing much earlier. You know, I've been doing track days for 12 years, and only last year I started racing. As soon as you get on that grid and you're going out to Avon Rise with 38 other cars, it's a whole different ball game. It's mega. And you know, we just went up a class pretty much straight away as soon as I did those two races into class B. And you know, we've been seeing top tens, which is awesome. The other things we do with Slip and Grip is we get group of guys together, and we do a lot of Euro trips as well. So we go out to Spa and Nürburgring, because I know that area quite well. And we've done like ice driving in Norway. We had a 2.8 E30 and just put it on the back of a trailer and went across Europe and did 2 days on the ice lakes. And it's experiences like this that you have that we can create with groups of people that all think the same thing, you know, and that's the reason they all get along. Mm-hmm. And this is the same really for the racing community, isn't it? You know, when you're in a paddock on race day, then you know you can go and talk to all of these people
you're not all aliens or all strangers, are you? You're all there for the same thing. And it's, you can't beat that vibe, can you?
I came from that background of sort of working for race teams, and I, you know, work for people like Pro Drive in their carbon factory, and you know, it's a really hard industry to get into if you're not already a motorsport family, or your family runs a business in the industry. You just have to push hard and send out emails to get work experience with teams, and you know, you won't get paid. It'll be free work experience. But
that's one thing we push for a lot, because we get asked a lot of the time, like, oh, I want to go racing. How do I get involved? And yes, as you say, it's not the easiest thing if you're not familiar with it. But yeah, you just got to get out there, muck in, find your local teams and things like that, and just
these days there are plenty of college courses and university courses that you don't, you know, I was terrible at school, and I still managed to go to motorsport college at Castle Coombe and get a diploma out of it. So if I can do it, then anyone can do it, you know.
Love it.
I got bored of having to traipse round circuits all the time, like having to come from England over to Spa to race, support Lotuses or Aston Martins for a weekend. It became an absolute ball ache compared to what you get paid. So I guess that's where I took, you know, what I know with marketing, what I know with motorsport, and created that business. And it's sort of a lifestyle thing, you know, as long as it's a passion, and as long as it pays its way and I get to race out of it as well, it's happy days, isn't it?
Fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
And I must say, the revised car you brought out later this year, Ross, looked absolutely immaculate. I do like an old school Civic, and that particular sort of age Civic, you don't see many of them around anymore, so it's good to see.
No, there's not many racing. There's one guy that races a yellow one, someone Johnson, I think it is. My friend Terry built that car from the ground up. We actually bought it 4 or 5 years ago with a 2.2 in it, and then we sold it on again as a project, and then bought it back again, took the 2.2 out, and then the B18 that we used in the EK last year, that went into the black EF. It's about 200 kilos lighter.
than the previous car. So that's really the difference, is we've managed to get a lot more speed without spending a huge amount of money. So, you know, it's only about 200 brake, but it weighs 850 kilos. So it's got the potential now to be up there at the front, aside from the sort of the K20s and the 205s. But I've just got to learn the car now. We did some testing last week, and I got into the 16s, which is what we were aiming for by the end of this year. So yeah, happy days, see what next year brings.
Nice,
happy chappies, that's what I like to hear. Right, with that, chaps, we actually wanted to I wanted to sort of take you, everyone, our listeners, our viewers, through to sort of the overall championship class winners. Hopefully, we have got a photo for each, courtesy of Chris Pearson. Thank you so much for putting that together for us, Chris. I did try to put them all in the correct order, putting photos on a photo document. Turns out to be an absolute ball ache.
Well, I named each one of the photos for you. It shouldn't have been too hard.
Exactly. Just quickly.
Rob knows how to make things hard.
That's what she said.
That is exactly what she said. Cheers, Stefan. Fantastic. On Ross's comments there, Peggy's actually commented, Ross, it has also been discussed that the Honda race car is not to be sold until it completes at least one full season of racing.
Yeah, so I have a history of going through a few cars in my time. I don't really keep a car longer than a year, if 6 months. So, but Terry's built this car and he's put an unreasonable amount of hours into it. So I'm basically contracted to keep hold of that car for a period of time.
Hopefully next year, when things are quite a bit back to normal, I look forward to coming down to Castle Coombe and looking at that hot hatch grid, because it does look immense.
Yeah, it'd be good to do a full season for sure.
Fantastic. Yeah. Right, so we take you to our Castle Coombe champions for 2020. Hopefully in the background, they're beavering away to get some photos ready for us. Our first one, we have Luke Cooper, who is a Class A and overall champion. If we've got the photo there somewhere. Car number 46, there we go. That looks cool.
Yeah, that's a good-looking car.
That's a very good-looking car. And we have Class C champion, which was Nathan Ward.
Just quickly on Luke Cooper, he had a new nose cone put on, because that was a white nose cone, but he had to replace the nose cone, so he had a bit of an off in race one, I believe.
Oh, the black looks all right, I reckon.
I was going to say, that actually looks like part of the scheme, fair play. I thought, sort of looking at it as well, I've realised now it's the shadow. It kind of looked like it had a little IndyCar wing on it.
Yeah.
But no, okay, so we go. So Class B champion was Nathan Ward. So there he is. Quite a newer car. But now we get to sort of the older spec Formula Ford 1600. So Class C champion, Mark De Rosario. I'm sorry if I get the name wrong. I'm really sorry. I'm terrible with names.
De Rosario.
Rosario. Thank you. Thank you. It's a good job we have circuit commentator legend Chris Dawes with us tonight to correct us of our wrongdoings. Class D champion, Andy Slater. Which should be coming
Alan.
Up. Alan Slater. Bloody hell.
God, Rob, even I'm... Come on, Rob. God.
I thought you did your homework.
And that went down to the very last race, is that circuit legend Bob Higgins thought that he had it, but he failed to finish the very last race, and so it went to Alan Slater. Those two were having a great battle all year.
Fantastic. Okay. So I would assume that is a circa 1960s Formula 4, because the only thing I could think of when I saw that photo... it's just sort of like, where's the back end gone? The bodywork's gone. But then you just remember how they were put together back then. It's literally just your front monocoque and then the engine. That's it. Proper racing.
You said monocoque.
Oh, God. Okay, guys. From that, we move on to the Castle Coombe Saloon, the overall and Class C champion, Mark Sutton, in his MGZR. There we go. That's a funky little colour scheme. I like that. Class A chair.
You would have funk it, eh? An MG.
They're quite popular at Coupe. They're quite quick as well. I remember one winning in the wet overall in the saloons a couple of years ago. Mr. Dawes, you might be able to recount it if you were there. It was definitely a couple of years ago. It weren't that long ago.
What was that, sorry?
An MGZR, one overall in the wet, in the saloons. A brown one. And I can't
James Keeping.
That's it. That's right. And he did it. That was another live sort of live club race day. Okay, so the Class A champion was Adam Preble in the Interceptor Astra. If it's there. It should be a white Vauxhall Astra.
Yeah, Vauxhall. Whee!
Is that the X Mark White car, or is that another car that's been built?
Different one. Mark's is NA.
Ah, okay. Okay, well, it looks like we're not going to get the photo up of the Astra. Class B champion was Simon Thornton Norris in the Mitsubishi Colt. I don't think Elaine's got that one.
And that's one overall.
There we go. Oh.
It depends what script you got wrong.
Hey, all the photos on the original script, okay? Chris Hignall, class D champion in his Peugeot 106, who, by the looks of it, was retiring after 7 years racing in the Castle Coombe saloons. They put a lovely livery on the bonnet for the last round. Just thanking everyone. And he ended up Class D champion. That's not a bad way to retire, is it?
Yeah, that's a pretty good way to retire. I did see that.
Okay, he's only a couple of points off the overall as well.
Oh, really?
Oh, really? No.
Now, that would have really been a good way to go. Overall champion.
Tell me about it.
So, with that, we move on to the Castle Coombe GT winners. We have Tony Bennett, who was the Class B and overall Castle Coombe GT champion in his Westfield. Was that? No, Caterham.
I hope this picture comes. There it is.
There we go. Oh,
love that photo.
Not to be confused with the classic singer Tony Bennett. This is a different one. He's a racing driver.
Do you know what? Whoever took these photos, he must be really good.
I think he is.
And really, really skint as well.
I would say who took them, but I can't pronounce the company name. So.
You should be able to by now, Rob.
Photos taken by Chris Pearson. Class A champion was Oliver Bull, which, looking at that, was the Tigra.
Yeah, the silhouette.
The silhouette. Okay, we don't have the photo of that one by the looks of it. Satchet Kakad was Class C champion. That does look like a TCR car. Nick.
It does look
Nick. Stefan's got a script. Jamie Sturgis was Class D champion. And
two different cars he had out, and that was because he had the Golf and the Seat, both sort of. I think they are TCR cars, aren't they? I don't know if anyone else can confirm.
They look like TCR cars.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, they're TCR, yeah.
I was corrected on a previous podcast that apparently the Seat is not a TCR car. It's a Euro Cup, but it looks just like a TCR.
That's right, yeah.
Same in it.
Same difference.
With different shocks on them or something.
Alex Baldwin, Class E champion, not to be confused with Hollywood star Alec Baldwin in his Honda Civic. He was Class E champion in the Castle Coombe GT Championship. We go to the hot hatch sort of winners and notables. Bear with me, my Word document's gone a bit awry. And okay, you're gonna have to correct me on this again, guys. Sean Govard.
Govard,
first most winningest driver in his 106. Look at that. That looks well.
Mega car, that mega looking car. So fast as well.
There are some rapid 106s in that shit.
Yeah, so crazy fast.
That's the thing about hot hatch and saloons. Like, you've got the massive, like, big banger turbos at the front, but you've also got the likes of Matt Parr, who's bloody quick in his 106. He hasn't been out this year. I'm sure he'll be back. Nathan Nichols in his Saxo. Will DeClaudio, I think. Has he still got his 106?
So he's supporting Govard at the moment, which is that last racing on the side.
Yeah.
He's talking about maybe coming out a couple of times next year.
Fantastic. Because they're just rapid cars. It must be someone in the water around Coombe.
Yeah, maybe something French in the water.
Yeah, maybe. Jordan Curnow. Jordan Curnow, who I'm ably told by Chris Pearson, so he won both the races on the finals day.
Yeah, race one and two.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Do we have the image for that? I don't know if we do. I don't think they have many after that. So we have Jordan Curnow, who won both races in the finals day in his Honda Civic Type R. Stephen Jensen, the second most winningest driver in his Mini R53. That would be who you guys were referring to earlier in the Mini class.
Yeah, the Zebra Mini.
The Zebra Mini. I did wonder. It almost looks like those cars that you see driving out and about when they're sort of pre-production. The camouflage. Yeah, that's not supposed to be camouflage.
Yeah, I'm hiding the look of the car. No, you're not.
And Tony Cooper as well, looking at the stats, is the third most winningest driver in his Peugeot 106. So well done to those drivers this year. Well done to everyone involved with the Castlecombe Racing Club. Truly proper club level racing brought to the masses. Friendly, great circuit, great atmosphere, great people. I'm sure a few of us will be back there next year and bringing you some amazing content.
Yeah, Chris. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Stefan will probably. And Stefan
I'm,
will probably
I'm tempted to bring me Vectra along for a race. What do you reckon?
Vectra, I'll do it.
Well, next year.
Oh,
silence.
Maybe. You could get it finished.
I don't know. I may see hot hatch did tempt me with the Focus, but I need to learn to bloody drive it first. So I may be interested in a couple of your track days coming up, Mr. Parker.
And fix this
splitter's fixed. It's got bits on order. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
You know, it stay on from the next time you hit the blade of grass, or is it going to fall off again?
I'll bloody make sure it stays.
It's not the splitter that's the problem about staying on. It's you staying on the track, you dinlow.
Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much nailed it. The splitter, you know, it's not here or there. The splitter would have stayed on the car if I'd have stayed on the bloody track. Right, before we go to the competition.
Is it splitter or shovel?
It's a massive shovel.
It turned from splitter to a spade in seconds. It was fantastic. Just back to the last few comments we've seen coming through. Ben Neil Robinson, that colt, I think he's referring to Simon Thornton Norris. I know he races Time Attack. That colt is crazy fast. I remember at Snetterton with it last year in Time Attack, and it was pulling away from him down the straight, and he was in his Noble. He put, won't be happening again. So we'll watch that space.
No. Yeah, watch this space.
Yeah, fighting talk there, Ben. Fighting talk. With that, chaps, we go over to our competition, our sexy competition section of the Club Racing UK podcast. It's over to Nick and Stefan. Because you're going to announce
a competition, right? We are going to announce a winner, actually. No pressure, doing it on live. Yeah, so we have obviously been doing our wired remote control competition for all our members, which was 250 quid's worth of wired remote gear, which was obviously the button, GoPro, all the mounts for it, all the cabling for it. I did do a random name generator earlier, but unfortunately, I didn't bloody save the video, but our winner is... That's terrible. But Mr. Jonathan Candler, you have won yourself a wired GoPro kit. I'll drop you a message because you're probably not watching the podcast. But If you are, then you are our latest competition winner, mate. So we will get that sorted out for you. Fantastic. I'll do a proper post for it as well. But annoyingly, I didn't save the bloody video for the.
Yeah, we don't do hard tech on the Club Racing UK podcast, but dare we bring this?
Absolutely not.
We no, just bring the text to Bill, which this week we've had it in absolute spades. So,
yeah, we have.
Any final comments, gentlemen?
There's one thing I want. There's one.
What's that?
Yeah, go on, Steph. Go, you do that one.
What do you call it, Nick? Is it save of the year?
No. Steph, do the other competition.
Yeah, yeah.
What, no, do the other competition.
Is it save of the year by HRX?
What?
Is that what it's called? Save of the year.
Yes, so it's this. I get you to do it, and you don't even know the competition, you numpty. Yeah, so we are still running. We're still running our other competition sponsored by HRX for winning a set of Nomex underwear, and that's for the 2020 Save of the Year. There's some great entries in there. If you head to our group, the Paddock, if you've had a scary brown trouser moment this year, it has to be this year. We've had quite a few from previous years, but it's for this year only. Submit it in the post, or if you can't do that, just send us a link and we'll post it up for you. But yeah, if you've had a scary brown trouser moment from the year, then get it in and you could win yourself some free Nomex underwear courtesy of HRX.
That's by Ben Edwards, is it?
TV's Ben Edwards, yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay. Sorry? Okay, that's just gone straight over Nick's head. Coach, it's judged by TV's Ben Edwards. I didn't. Yeah?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Ben Edwards will be...
Yeah. We haven't quite done professional.
No, it glitched out. My internet glitched.
Sure it did.
Okay.
Internet glitched. I didn't hear what you said.
You're not on Sky, are you? Not on Sky Broadband at all, are you?
Hey, I'm on my data, and I now live in the middle of nowhere, so...
Gonna need another bolt on soon.
Yeah, he's going to need another bolt on. Not yet.
I think I'm going to apply for it, though. I'm going to get it. Hopefully, next podcast, I will actually have internet in the house.
Fantastic. Well, if you could get that hamster to spin a little bit faster on the wheel, we can get some internet.
Before we round it up, there's one thing I do want.
What's that?
Yeah.
Well, go on, man.
Am I all over the place? There's one that... Shut up! So, obviously, Steph and the boys are going to Castle Coombe this Friday to do a track day. Gents from Castle Coombe, talk us through the perfect lap. What should he be doing, or what should the guys be doing on Friday? Take us through a perfect lap of Castle Coombe.
Put it flat to the floor.
No, I don't hear videos. I want it from you guys.
It's entirely different depending on what car you're using, but the most important ones really are Avon Rise, getting Avon Rise right into Tower, so you don't end up in the tire wall there. And then into Tower Corner as well, because there's about a meter of tire wall, you know, a meter of grass before the tire wall, which isn't ideal. but it seems like a straightforward track until you actually drive it and you try to get some pace out of it, and you realise that it's the undulations and the bumps and the humps in it that make it challenging. But you'll be all right.
It'll be fine.
Too bad, though, mate, because they've got the Rectocell barriers, which what are they made out of again, Dorsey?
It's unicorn poo and the cream of a bourbon biscuit.
Oh. That's right.
Count straight off, then.
If that is true, I'm going to steal.
Yeah, I quite imagine.
Steal some of those Rectocell. Love it.
Nick,
and also, gents, am I right in saying as well, up to Avon Rise, is that, I've always been told this, but I want to know if it's definitely true. Apparently it's statistically the most insurance claimed corner in the UK.
It's the most crashed.
Is that true?
Yeah, the figures that I've heard is that over 50% of all motor racing incidents in the country happen at Quarry Corner.
Excellent.
I don't know whether that's actually true or not, but
having sat at Quarry Corner for many years, I'd say it's probably true.
Yeah.
Yeah. All I'm trying to do here, gents, is paint the perfect picture for Steph this weekend, or this Friday. But also,
so he can record his brown trouser moment.
Yeah, exactly. Well, our mechanic, Justin White, who's been helping us since we've been doing the club racing side of things, and even when I was racing the Vectra, he's doing his first ever track day this Friday. So in a Honda S2000. So what could possibly go wrong?
It's going to be entertaining.
Just a quick observation. Yeah. It looks like Steph's got a really awesome mohawk.
I know, right?
Yeah, I keep thinking that.
That's there.
Hell yes, man. Well,
right.
To be fair, this week I've been out bearded, to be fair. But we'll go with it. I've 100% been out bearded.
Still got a very shiny head, though, Nick.
Oh, I shaved it before I came on air.
I was going to say, did you mean to sheen it? just quickly, final comments. Pescara Productions says Paddock Hill can't be far behind. Ooh. Yeah, very true. There's like, I think Paddock Hill has the extra bit of the soundtrack, whereas Quarry is just barriers. And that's it. Yeah. If you get it bad into there, it's going to hurt the wallet very, very quickly. Okay, if that's everything, chaps, once again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Nick?
Nothing?
No? Oh, I thought you were going to say something.
No, I'm all good.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to our guest today. We have the legendary circuit commentator, Chris Dawes. We have Ross Parker of Slip and Grip Automotive. Chris Pearson of Sepia Photo.
Yay!
Come on, Rob.
Of course, the two miscreants below me, Stefan Marsh, Nick Holmes. I've been Robert Lewis, and this has been the Club Racing UK podcast with our Castle Coombe special. Good night. Thank you very much.